Live from Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The U.S. Forest Service is moving ahead with one of the largest old-growth timber sales Southeast Alaska has seen in years. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the project has raised questions over new old-growth clear cuts in Tonga's National Forest.
There's a lot that Alaska Forest Association's Executive Director Owen Graham likes about the Prince of Wales Island project. It offers both old and young-growth timber.
The old-growth portion will provide mill jobs, and the young growth portion will almost exclusively end up getting shipped overseas, but it's providing jobs. It just those are good jobs.
But he objects to constraints by the Forest Service. It won't allow more than 100 acres of clear cut at a time. The federal government projects as much as 225 million board feet of old growth will be harvested over 15 years. That's alarmed at conservationists.
It's going to be controversial anytime the Forest Service plans a large old-growth timber sale like this.
Austin Williams is Trout Unlimited's Alaska Policy and Legal Director. He questions the Forest Service's commitment to phase out old-growth logging in the Tongass over the next decade.
You know, if the Forest Service really wants to be responsive to people in Southeast Alaska, it's going to have to figure out a way to stick to its plan to transition away from large-scale old-growth logging and get into more sustainable forest management.
Trying to define what sustainable forest management looks like goes to the heart of debate over the Tongass. This project uses a new approach for the federal agency in Alaska. It specifies what could be authorized without pinpointing specific areas. That frustrates critics like Williams.
It's just really hard to tell exactly what this project might look like on the ground.
Even industry supporters like Graham agree.
It's disconcerting to people like me and others that we're used to seeing projects that have a much higher level of detail, but that doesn't mean this is a bad project.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game raised concerns over lost habitat. The state agency asked the Forest Service to minimize old-growth clear cuts to save deer. It also asked for buffers around known wolf dens. Neither approach was included in the final plan.
Removing the old-growth forest tends to reduce habitat quality for deer, in some cases quite dramatically.
Tom Schumacher supervises Fish and Game's Wildlife Division for Southeast. He said the Forest Service proposes to thin young forests to stimulate more undergrowth for deer to eat. But he says when forests are thinned,
that leaves a lot of slash on the ground from the trees that were cut. And all that slash makes it very difficult for deer to access the area. You know, if you try to, it's a real obstacle course with all the trunks and limbs. But if you produce food there, we don't know if it's available to deer.
Less deer means less food for wolves. That's another concern for state wildlife biologists.
Wolf conservation in Prince of Wales has been a controversial topic for decades, and we've had two endangered species petitions to list wolves in that area. Both have been found unwarranted, but we suspect we'll see another one at some point. So we want to be very careful with management of wolves in that area.
The Forest Service's landscape-level analysis also describes up to 200 miles of in-stream restoration and as many as 3 new cabins and a dozen shelters, plus hiking trails. That's welcomed by conservationists like Williams.
The future of the Tongass is going to be in recreation, fishing, hunting, tourism, as well as, I think, we can have a robust forest products industry, but it's going to have to be based on young-growth forest products.
Which the logging industry argues does little for keeping the 100 or so remaining sawmill jobs in Southeast. And so the Tongass debate continues. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The Forest Service says it plans to officially approve the Prince of Wales Landscape Level Analysis Project at a signing ceremony in Craig on Saturday. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game says its massive hatchery wild research study will inform the conversations surrounding the rates at which hatchery pink and chum salmon stray into wild streams, and whether they're less productive than their wild counterparts. The project could have big market and regulatory implications for Alaska's hatchery industry. Fish and Game scientists and certifying bodies have questioned the scientific integrity of the project, but as KBBI's Aaron Bolton reports, officials are maintaining that the study is not biased.
In recent years, Alaska's hatchery programs have been in the hot seat. Scientists, stakeholders, and certifying entities have questioned whether hatchery fish are having a negative effect on wild stocks. At a recent Board of Fisheries meeting, many in the industry and Fish and Game officials like Commercial Fisheries Division Director Sam Raybung pushed back against that notion.
If you look at natural production in these areas, it's as high or higher than it's ever been of these species. So we're not seeing a negative effect on natural production. So we're taking a deeper dive to see if there's something that we're missing.
Private nonprofit hatcheries and Fish and Game responded to scrutiny with a massive multi-million dollar research project that started in 2013. They say the ongoing hatchery wild research project will shed light on the proportions of hatchery and chum salmon found in both Prince William Sound and Southeast Alaska wild systems. It's also supposed to help determine whether hatchery fish produce fewer offspring than wild stocks. However, scientists both inside and outside of Fish and Game have questioned the study's integrity. Up until 2015, Greg Ruggeroni served on a panel of scientists that assessed the sustainability of Alaska's salmon fisheries for the Marine Stewardship Council. The panel also included former Fish and Game scientists, and they feared the study's design, which has never been peer-reviewed, may be biased.
Partly because the way they were presenting the study, they were presenting it in a biased way. They were saying we're planning to demonstrate that our hatchery fish have no adverse effect on the wild fish.
The industry and Fish and Game hope the Hatchery Wild study will satisfy the Stewardship Council's overarching concerns about hatchery fish affecting the sustainability of wild stocks. The council may drop its certification for Prince William Sound and Southeast salmon fisheries if it doesn't. And that's a big deal because that certification provides access to many lucrative seafood markets worldwide. There have also been concerns about the makeup of the science panel that designed the study. Current and former nonprofit hatchery managers, board members, and others in the commercial fishing industry make up a third of the panel.
They are the experts on how they operate the hatchery, but ultimately the study design needs to come from scientists that are familiar with these types of studies, not the industry, not the hatchery managers.
Fish and Game chief fishery scientist Bill Templin is aware of the optics.
Yeah, I know it's been a criticism of the program that the hatcheries are involved. However, we also have some people on the panel who are publicly not fans of hatcheries.
The study isn't just receiving scrutiny from outside entities. Through a leaked document that was later submitted to the Board of Fish, Fish and Game's own scientists questioned whether the study's design would minimize the impact stray hatchery fish are having on wild production. Despite the concerns, Templin says the study will produce peer-reviewed work on the percentages of hatchery fish showing up in wild streams, also known as stray rates. The science panel is also discussing how it will present findings on the productivity of hatchery fish. Preliminary results indicate female hatchery pink salmon may be less productive.
I'll tell you right now, on the science panel, the opinion is not that these are favorable or unfavorable. The opinion is it appropriate to have these potentially used for making policy decisions.
It could be a couple of years before the science panel releases all of the results on the productivity question, and it's still up for discussion whether those findings will be peer-reviewed. But there's another question the science panel will grapple with moving forward. How will the department provide access to the massive data set collected through this project? Science panel member and University of Alaska Fairbanks researcher Peter Westley referred to it as a research goldmine that could shed light on the mechanisms behind stray hatchery fish.
So setting aside just for a moment the policy implications and the livelihoods that are affected by all of this and so forth, well, what are those fish doing on the spawning ground? So how long are they living? How many eggs do they spawn? How big are they?
However, it's unclear what data will be released publicly and when the science panel will make that decision. Any spin-off research could add to a growing body of peer-reviewed studies scrutinizing the impact of hatchery programs. But industry members on the science panel will also have a say in how data from the Hatchery Wild study informs that research. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
More than 100 people rallied in Anchorage Day in solidarity with an international effort for a global climate strike to raise awareness of climate change.
What do we want?
Climate justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Climate justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
17-year-old Maxim Unruh organized the event with Alaska Youth for Environmental Action. Unruh is a German exchange student attending East High School in Anchorage. He says students in Anchorage have described change on the local level. The Sitka Sound Sacro Herring Fishery will go on two-hour notice on Sunday. That means the fishery could open as early as 10 a.m. Sunday. And commercial fisheries for halibut and black cod started up today, while king salmon trolling in southeast Alaska shuts down. 40 degrees, light rain at Juneau International Airport.